Okay, so this is the third stop on our walk on which we're talking about landowner, wildlife, and habitat relationships. So you remember on the first stop, I talked about the value of wildlife and wolves in particular. I talked about genetic wisdom. On the second stop, I tried to focus in on sense of place, and I introduced new terms like storied residence, solastalgia, shifting baseline syndrome, and situated knowledge. On this third stop, I'm going to go in a different direction again. I'm going to talk about the future and how, given that the future is not going to resemble the past, what sorts of technologies and practices might be appropriate for managing and interacting with wildlife. Okay, so the future is not going to resemble the past. I think that's a given. We know enough about climate change. We know enough about habitat destruction and about invasive species to be pretty confident that what lays in the next 50 years or so is not going to look like what we experienced in the last 100, maybe even in the last 1,000 years. Fortunately, or some would say unfortunately, there are some dramatic new technologies coming on hand that may permit radically different types of relationships between humans and wildlife. So I'm going to talk about three of those technologies. Well, actually, two of them are technologies. One of them is really a different sort of practice for interacting with wildlife. I'm just going to put them out there. I'm going to see what you think and welcome you to question these technologies or embrace them or be optimistic or pessimistic, however they land with you. Okay, so the first one. The first technology is a gene drive. So, a gene drive is really what it sounds like. It's a way to drive a gene through a population. So, let's say you found a genetic trait that was useful. So, let's say you could create a trait that would prevent a certain form of wildlife from getting a disease. What a gene drive does is it allows you to put that trait into a handful of those organisms. So, bring the organism into the lab, insert that trait into the organism, and then let that organism loose in the wild. And when it breeds, that organism will drive that trait through all of its offspring. Now, that's unusual. Normally, a trait has a 50-50 chance of being inherited. That's the rules of Mendelian inheritance. What a gene drive does is it increases that chance from 50-50 up to something above 90-10, even approaching 100%. So, if you find a trait you think desirable, we're on the point of having the ability to drive that trait through a wild population. And what's interesting about it is we're not talking only about populations on a farm or in a lab or in a very controlled environment. We're talking about populations way out there in the wild that never come anywhere near humans. So gene drives will let us shape wild animals. Now, the first example I gave was something that actually might be quite desirable. You could maybe insulate an organism against a disease it might be subject to. So that sounds like a good idea. But what if you want to do something else, like, for example, change an organism just so it suited humans a little better? So maybe you could change wolves so they weren't so ferocious. Or perhaps change grizzly bears so that they didn't like the smell of humans. Would all of this be good? Or, on the other hand, would it be a matter of taking control of the wild, putting human desires and intentions into a part of the world that really is special because it avoids human desires and intentions? So, would it be a case of further exploiting the world around us for our own desires? Would it be compatible with what we value in the natural world? So, those are some of the questions that gene drives raise. I think they're important questions. All right, ready for technology two? De-extinction. De-extinction is pretty much what it sounds like, bringing extinct species back from the dead. Now, can we do that? Not really, but we're getting pretty close. We're pretty good now at reading genomes, and we know the genomes of some organisms that have gone extinct. So the passenger pigeon, for example, extinct since 1914. We pretty much know what that passenger pigeon genome looked like. There's enough specimens left in museums that we've been able to sequence genetic material and come up with a passenger pigeon genome. Same is true for the Tasmanian tiger. Extraordinary marsupial from Australia that had stripes on it, and that went extinct in the 30s. The same is also true, amazingly, for the woolly mammoth. We know what the woolly mammoth genome is. So how do you de-extinct an animal like a woolly mammoth? Well, you find an animal that has a genome relatively close to it. So the Asian elephant has a genome that is really pretty similar to the woolly mammoth. Then you use some modern technologies that allow you to edit genomes. So you get that Asian elephant genome and you edit it. You take out the bits that look like Asian elephant and you put in bits that look like woolly mammoth. So for example, you could edit an Asian elephant genome to make it a little more hairy, like a woolly mammoth. Or you could potentially edit an Asian elephant genome to give it those long, curved tusks that the woolly mammoth has. When you've edited it so that it's as close as you think you can get it to a woolly mammoth, what you do is you take an ovum from an Asian elephant, you take out the DNA that that ovum has, and you stuff in it as a replacement the edited DNA that looks like a woolly mammoth. So you take woolly mammoth DNA and you stick it into Asian elephant ova, and then you apply a little electric charge, and hopefully that ovum starts dividing, forms a blastocyst, and eventually an embryo which can be implanted into an Asian elephant mother. So that Asian elephant is a surrogate mother for a woolly mammoth child. Extraordinary idea there. We borrow a uterus from a living species and we grow an extinct species in that uterus until it comes to term. And I can't stop thinking about that first woolly mammoth that pops out from that Asian elephant mother. It arrives on Earth, looks around, wonders where all its fellow species members are. It would be weird when your closest relative hasn't been there for 5,000 years. But potentially we could de-extinct animals like passenger pigeons, woolly mammoths, Tasmanian tigers, and you name it, any species for which we have the DNA. Good or bad? It's tricky. Obviously, it's a great loss that some of these animals are gone. But on the other hand, if we have not shown ourselves able to keep them alive, is it conceivable that we would do a better job this time around? Is it cruel to bring back a species that would at least initially be entirely alone? And would it really be a woolly mammoth? If it's made up of genetic material that is mostly Asian elephant, if the embryo is incubated in an Asian elephant womb, it's going to pick up some genetics from that Asian elephant. So would it really be a woolly mammoth? Would we be doing this for woolly mammoths, or would it just be something we do again to show our power and our technological prowess? So that's de-extinction. All right, the third technology or practice, rewilding. The history of the Earth has really been one in which humans have taken an increasing amount of control. We've managed natural processes more and more. We've led them to do our bidding to greater and greater extents. We've domesticated things, we've tamed things, we've removed species we didn't want. We've stamped our footprint more and more firmly across the surface of the earth. What if we tried to reverse that? What if we tried to let landscapes rewild by stepping back and letting natural processes take over? We might start out by helping those natural processes a little bit. Perhaps we could bring back a species if it's still alive, put it on the landscape. We might even put some D7 cats in there to knock down a few dams or let some rivers flow wild again. We might try and recontour landscapes that have been shaped by humans. But after that little bit of management, that little bit of intervention, we would then step back. We would let natural processes take over. There would be no expectation. There would be no management. There would be no attempt to say, hey, I didn't want it to go that way. We would literally take our hands off the wheel and allow natural processes to continue uninterrupted. Evolutionary forces, hydrological forces, geology, it would all be happening on its own terms. And we would just be watching. Could we do that? Would we have the moral restraint even to do that? And if we did, would we be recreating something of astonishing natural value, something that has been slowly diminishing over the last 10,000 years? Could we turn a corner and allow that value to reappear, reestablish itself on the landscape? Now, obviously, we couldn't do that everywhere. We'd have to very carefully select the places that were allowed to rewild. But as the population curve begins to taper off, and as some landscapes begin to empty out, as are happening in Europe and in some parts of North America, there are some possibilities available that weren't available before. So those are three possible futures that are looming ahead of us. Gene drives sending genetic traits across the wild as we desire. De-extinction, bringing back lost species through advanced genetic technologies. And rewilding, just stepping back and allowing nature to take over and do its thing again without us. These three are kind of exciting. They're kind of terrifying. I'm not sure if we should head in those directions. But they're certainly provocative in a future that is not going to resemble the past. So we need to be talking about them, thinking about them, debating them, and trying to decide collectively and inclusively if those are the directions we want to go. So think about it and get in touch if you want to chat more. Cheers.